and sweep it high. Run flat, stay low. Run the mountain, run the road. Run past the eight stand to the commode. Oh, run sweep it high. Run flat, stay low. One stream.
Welcome, welcome everyone to episode 22 of the Mountain Outpost Pod. I am your co-host, Jamil Curry, Jam Jam, here today with Skylar Hall, Skizzle Fresh. How you doing, sir?
Dude, I am still rebounding from the week that was, but how are you doing?
That's very fair to say. I feel in a similar boat. I'm taking quite a few office couch naps in between trying to get some work done and be productive this week. So, yeah, I think the body is like I don't feel injured. I don't feel too sore, other than I think some blisters that are still healing up. But if I stand for too long, I definitely feel tired in the legs and have not attempted to run yet. So I see some Cocodona runners are already getting back into the swing of things. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, I would like to think that for you all who finished it, it was like a long through hike. So the odds of bouncing back and trying to do anything that resembles faster running would probably be pretty jarring to the body. But hell, I didn't do it, so I'll rely on you guys to see how you all respond and get ready to tackle the challenges that lie ahead, because you have, what, like 10 weeks until your next race at this point. So,
yeah, I haven't even got that far ahead to think about. I did sign myself up for a bunch of fall races, though. I went on a bit of a ultra sign up binge already, but, yeah, I'm in some uncharted territory, uncharted waters, as far as, this sort of an effort, you know, 92 hours, 59 minutes, longest event I've ever participated in. I mean, I know I've done, quote unquote, done some 6 days and across the years, but I'm not by any means competing or putting up anywhere this sort of mileage in any of those races. I mean, the most I've really ever done it at anything that we've done, like a Silverton 1000 or a Silverton 6 day or across the years, is like 100 miles or something, you know, in the course of a week. So, this is beyond anything I've ever done by a magnitude. I did Tahoe 264 hours. This course blows that away, in my opinion, in terms of difficulty by a huge magnitude. And, you know, obviously I'm not a 60-hour five-loop Barkley finisher, but I can imagine that would be maybe a comparable effort to this. But, yeah. I slept, I think, 11 hours. Didn't sleep much that night I finished. I think only about 4 hours. I don't know. When was that? Friday or something? Friday night?
Thursday night into Friday morning.
Okay.
Yep.
But I think Friday night and then Saturday night, I slept, I think, 11 hours each. So trying to put in some good pillow time and start to get the recovery. I think the most painful thing for me, which started to develop in the last 25 miles, I would say, whenever I would stop. I don't know if this started to develop when you were with me, like the last few miles of our last stretch. Mm-hmm. But if I would stop, I could feel like it felt like blood or fluid was like rushing to the area right under the ball of my foot. Then when I started, so it was like, it got extremely painful. It felt like it was swelling up. And when I started running again, it like pounded it out within a few steps and then it felt okay. But essentially I had developed these really massive blisters in the balls of my feet. And it was very painful the last 20 miles when I was with Eric, to the point of like, I almost would rather not stop than have to kind of let that feeling come. And then, man, the next morning when I tried to get up, I crashed at our media team's Airbnb and I could not put weight on my feet. like it's like barefoot walking four steps to get to the bathroom. And it was, I think Dylan got me on camera trying to make that. That was like impossible to go four steps. So, yeah, I feel like I got the full experience and, man, yeah, now it's like, well, what's next? I mean, it's a lot more rest and a lot more time and a lot more recovery really. So, but yeah, super grateful, for the experience to toe the line at the inaugural Cocodona. And I really felt like I had little choice but to finish the race, you know, with kind of all the pressure of everyone looking to me as like the guy who thought up this crazy idea to finish the dang thing. But it was still hard, and there were doubts along the way. There were doubts, but there weren't doubts, you know. Like, there's no way I was going to allow myself to quit, but it's really hard to just wrap your head around how far this is, how tough this is. And I knew it was coming. You know, I helped design this thing. I knew what we were up against, and not many people could say that. So even more kudos to probably the rest of you that just went into this thing and were kind of subject to it. So, it's tougher than I thought piecing it all together. And, but I'm also grateful for that because I think creating a super tough iconic race, I'm definitely proud of it. And I think I'm proud of everyone who just even towed the line. But you know, the 108 finishers, it's truly inspiring to see what people went through. And I think it really was a life-changing type experience, which is I think what we hoped it would be.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, a lot of those same sentiments were shared both on course as we were hanging out either at aid stations or running with folks, and especially afterwards from even some of the DMs that we got for questions tonight and topics and whatnot. So I think you achieved the goal of creating a ridiculous race that people wholeheartedly enjoy as much as they want to literally murder you in the process of running it. And we'll go into a full play-by-play. We have questions submitted ahead of time. We obviously have the live chat here that folks can drop in questions while we get to it. And, you know, we're just going to, it's going to be a lot of Cocodona talk. Just a lot of Cocodona recap tonight on this edition. So if you have those questions, now's the time to start mulling them over. But before we get to it, we have two orders of business. One, since we didn't do a pod last week, we have a lot of Run Flat news I got to catch people up on. And two, part of any good recovery is making sure that you're getting all the nutrients your body needs, including carbs. So I see you have a drink in front of you. What do you have, good sir?
Oh, yeah. We got to thank some random person for leaving this, or I don't know. It was in our company fridge. So thank you. I'm shouting you out. Lagunitas. Stereohopic IPA. Here it is. That's what we're going for.
I like it. Yeah. On my end, I have the Oakland United Double Vision. I thought this was pretty on the nose for how I felt leaving Sedona. So, yeah, I think we're on the grind here. So, cheers,
well,
sir.
Shout out to you, sir. You paced 100K. Really appreciate those miles. You definitely pushed me out there. So cheers to you. Thank you.
Cheers, sir. No, not a problem. Yeah, we're going to get back to that shenanigans soon. But first, let me sprint through some Run Flat news and catch the people up on the things that were not 250 miles, but closer to 250 meters. So let me grab the book, 2 weeks worth of stuff to catch folks up on, but we will do so very quickly. We're going to start in the pro world. So we have the Kansas City Qualifier, the Trials and Miles guys put on yet another great event, completely free to watch on the CDS Mag YouTube channel, and that's still up. So if you want to see free track or you're working out in your house for some reason, that is all up and live over there. Big performance of the night, Amy Pratt with the 938 steeple, you know, really trying to beef up what was otherwise thought to be one of the pretty straightforward events that we're going to see at the Olympic trials in terms of that women's steeplechase. Pretty much thought we knew what the top three were going to be, but more and more women are stepping up to the challenge to make that an actual competitive event. come the meet in June. But the big race, the U.S. Continental Gold Label, whatever the hell, weird things that we're calling things now, at Mount SAC this past weekend. Everybody who saw SportsCenter or literally opened any newspaper obviously saw the DK Metcalf news. Wide receiver for the Seattle Seahawks gets roped into a sprint race. He actually hurdled back in high school, had a pretty decent career, but he got in the blocks, a man of his word. Instead of just talking stuff on the internet, actually, you know, put his money where his mouth was and showed up and raced real professionals. He did take DFL in the prelims, so that's saying something. Ran 10:37 for the 100 meters, but we knew this news story was going to break a couple different ways because it's the prelims. The guys at the front weren't going all out. Cravon Gillespie won the prelim that DK was in, running like 10.11. He ends up winning the final, running a 9.96. So, you know, they're obviously they weren't going max speed in that prelim, and DK still took DFL. But everybody was like, look how close he is to the guys who are finishing. But if you put them all 0.2 seconds faster or 0.15 seconds faster, you'd actually see a visible gap, significantly more than we did in the race video that DK actually won or that he actually raced in. So take it for what you will. Everybody's just like, he's so big. Usain Bolt was also over 200 pounds, but like, whatever. He stepped up, he showed up, and he actually did the damn thing. So congrats to him shining a light on the sport and not just being some D-bag athlete. He actually had a really nice post-race interview where he gave a lot of credit to the professional track athletes who do this day in and day out and admitted that football speed is not track speed and they are not the same. If he trained for this for a year, could he be decent? Probably. But again, we're talking about, to make the finals at the U.S. Olympic trials, you're going to have to run sub 10. We have high schoolers and college kids who are running that fast. So, DK, thanks for stepping up and shining a light and then actually being humble about it at the finish. You can see, though, blocks, not his thing. I mean, you're coming from a two-point stance in football, then all of a sudden, you know, it wasn't horrible form. His dry phase could have been better. He popped up a little quick. But all things considered, football players are amazing athletes when they do the damn thing correctly. And he just showed
that. Is that him there in lane two?
That's him in lane two. Yeah. So, yeah, obviously it's him in lane two. Look how big he is compared to everybody else. It was hilarious. It was a great visual.
Just confirming. Okay.
It's kind of like when you have to like mix – you're like combining heats because you don't want a track meet to run forever. And so you just put you end up with like freshmen running against the seniors and like the freshman has not been lifting. And it was one of those visuals. It was great. So shout out. You can watch that video online. It's everywhere. And then tell your friends that you'll race them up the block and win some money off of them because apparently everybody thinks that they can run 100 very, very fast. But the meet had a lot of other great performances that weren't just professional athletes from other sports showing up. In the women's 800, in the B heat, so not even the fastest heat, Kate Grace recently left Bowerman, runs 159, beats Brenda Martinez, who also runs 159. In the A heat, we had four American women run between 159.6 and 2 flat. So very competitive in the women's 800. Going to be a very interesting race to watch come the Olympic trials. It's basically going to have to take like 158 mid to make the team at best. And it's going to be lights. Fireworks. We'll go with that. It's going to be fireworks. Women's 800. Get super excited for it. Also on the women's side, Elle Puryear, coming off of, you know, two American records in the last 2 years, runs 358 in the 1500. Just beats the field by a second and a half, making it look easy, just pulling away, just raw strength. So get excited for that. She's actually, she should comfortably make the team in whatever event she decides to specialize in. We just don't really know what that means come the Olympics. Well, based on how tactical those races get, she's got the strength to pull away and actually be competitive and maybe surprise medal. So holding out hope. In the women's steeplechase, Courtney Frerichs made her season debut. She was one of those folks that we thought for sure top three finisher at the trials, going to make the team. She runs a 9:27 in the steeple. Leah Fallon runs a 9:28, and then Marissa Howard runs a 9:29. So again, this is her rust buster, but to have to basically pull two women along to the Olympic standard right behind you in an event where if you clip a barrier, your day is done, and there's a lot of margin or there's very little margin of error in the steeple. It's going to be very, very, very fun to watch that race because it's no longer just three women in front and then a race where everyone else is trying to make the final. So get excited for that. On the men's side, Sean McGordy, 5K specialist out of Stanford, now running with Bowerman. He runs an 8:20. Evan Jaeger comes out to pace him in Evan Jaeger's first time racing in 2 years, I think, had a pretty crazy lower leg injury. And so he comes out, he's like, I'm just going to jog 2,000 over some barriers because he's an elite athlete like that. And then Sean McGordy, in his debut, runs the Olympic standard in 8:20, wins by a second over, I think, Dan McCloskey is how you say his name, who runs 8:21. So, again, this is an event where not a lot of American men had the Olympic standard at all, and we've basically doubled the number of them that have that standard over the last 2 weeks. So things are coming together. And Sha'Carri Richardson, oh, man, she runs 10.7 twice in the 100 meters. She ran 10.77 into a headwind, which take it for what you will, but probably like this is the closest thing that America's seen to FloJo this generation because she's only like 21, 22 or something like that. So she's going to be very entertaining to watch. So if you have not seen Sha'Carri Richardson race, find a video and you'll just be like, all right, this is somebody you can get behind. That's the pro scene, college scene, super crazy. Jared Neguse from Notre Dame outkicked Cooper Tier at the Oregon Twilight Meet, I guess over a week ago now. Runs 335.96 for the win, literally does the lean and falls and tumbles at the finish line. So he's back. We told you he was coming, and now he's here. Guys are finally running fast 1500s on the college scene. Cole Hawker took third behind the two of them. Basically, Cooper Tier and Jared Neguse have both run 335 point something this year, making them the two fastest Americans, pro or collegiate, in the 1500. So that will be something to watch as we enter conferences this weekend. And then obviously we're 3 weeks or so from nationals. That sounds right. You also had Ella Donahue run 15:29 in the 5K. You had Chrissy Gear lead Whitney Orton in 4:09 in the 1500. So those two ladies are they're starting to flirt with the Olympic trials standard and need a chance to get in to, again, just create more collegiates, messing things up at the Olympic trials for the pros. And then Courtney Wayman, also of BYU, ran a 9:31 steeple a few weeks back at Fresno State. And again, Courtney Frerichs debuted at 9:27. You got a collegiate run in 9:31. She has to run it at least two more times between prelims and nationals. So she's going to have a chance to either lower and get underneath that Olympic standard and just like get a feel for the pit, because the steeple is not, you kind of wait late into the season before you start really putting down effort. So she's going to be very exciting to watch come nationals. And then once we get to the Olympic trials, you know, we're going to have potentially 7-8 women who can run under 9:30 comfortably, and then anything can happen. Just remember Steph Garcia falling in 2016, coming over the water pit with like two laps to go or something like that. And anything's possible in that sort of high pressure situation. So that's what's going down in terms of individual athletes. The NCAA also announced that they are re-expanding the field for the prelims. So they had shrank it to much chagrin from 48 to 32. They're now allowing 48 runners for both the West and the East regions. So going back to what normally happens, obviously that leaves the biggest margin of error for folks in the distance events. you basically now have to run just like 16 seconds slower in the 10K or something like that to get in. So very helpful for distance athletes. Sprints, you're always on a razor thin margin. So we'll see what happens there. And then in recreational news, we got to touch on the Boston Marathon that did happen while we were away, coming out with the 7:47 underneath the qualifying time to get in. So, yeah, that's insane for 20,000 people or something like that to get in. And you still had to run 7:47 under the like recently adjusted downward standards. This isn't the 3:05 that we had in 2018, 2019. This is, you know, 3 flat for your male athletes under 35 and 3:30, I believe it is for women under 35. And it's just a weird year. So there's a world where you could have auto qualified for the New York City Marathon and not gotten into Boston this year. So
is that what happened to you?
Yeah, no, I only missed it by 6 seconds. It's fine. I'm not bitter about it. Listen, this is what it comes down to. I've run Boston, so it's not like I was in for the first time, a pandemic happens, and then I'm now out. That would suck. That would be pretty horrible, and I'm sure that that's happened to somebody. And, you know, I definitely feel for them more than my personal situation. And two, like, it mounts to be, I was kicking. Like, it wasn't like I lollygagged across the finish line and could have picked up 6 seconds in the finishing shoot. Like, I was kicking down to the finish and, like, leaned at the line. So, you know, there wasn't a place for me to pick up 6 seconds where I can look back at that race and be like, oh, I goofed it. So it is what it is. You know, so I'll just wait to see if I get in to New York this year or if it, because of the weird structure of the folks who are in for 2020, getting one of the next 3 years. We'll see if that's a fall marathon I'm doing or if my race schedule is completely up in the air for the last 4 months of the year. So details forthcoming, but it's cool. But if anybody in the chat or listening is one of those folks who was in and then is now out, I got you. We're here together. Cheers to you. That's it. That's my flat news in a nutshell. We also got to talk about Taggart, which is like quasi run flat because it happened on a treadmill. But shout out to our boy for getting the 100-mile treadmill record. 11:32:05, I think officially is what it went down as. Saw the whole thing on Twitch. It was great. A lot of hype beasts there in the room with them, running next to him on the partner treadmill, and then just like hanging out at the brewery, which is exactly how I would want to spend a Saturday morning. So I was here for every little bit of it, and then it's full on. Just like champagne shower, like rager celebration was really the icing on the cake. So shout out to the kid for knocking that goal down and getting ready for his 6 days in the dome next month as he tries to go after the 100-mile record, all surfaces.
Let's see here. Pulling up some kind of video. Oh, it's going to play a bunch of ads. yeah.
Ad
I was
going to
see if
bro.
I had, I should have tried to find that celebration. That was amazing. But yeah, I was watching that too, as I was kind of doing final prep for the race, and people were actually checking in for Cocodona. And I think I was like tuned in and watching that thing.
I was literally getting ready to go to a pool party in Vegas and I was checking in on my phone, like watching it. So
oh yeah, here we go. He's awesome. hugging his mom right when he finishes. I think this is the one that has the.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I'm hoping so. Oh yeah, there we go.
I just love how many fans were set up as a heavy sweater myself who cannot run on a treadmill for more than like 20 minutes without feeling like absolute death. The full wind tunnel that he created for himself was very impressive.
Just spraying the whole bar. I love it. So yeah, he's got the two treadmills. He's got Zwift was like up on a big screen ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
A couple different, looks like camera angles and whatnot.
It's they were awesome. Killing it. Yeah. Yeah. They were, I mean, they were live streaming on Twitch.
I love that he decided to do it, you know, in a public place like that with like a bunch of people. I mean, it sounded like it was pretty hot, obviously, but hey, still made it happen.
No excuses. Whatever it takes, right? That was the hashtag.
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And yeah, I guess he's targeting the 100-mile overall record now.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be at 6 days in the Dome. They've got a 24-hour race set up on, I think it's June 19th. And he's going to be there. My brother's going to be there. Zach Bitter was supposed to be there, but my brother said he may or may not be. So we'll just have to see how that plays out. That would be epic. I don't know who else is. What's that?
No, that would be the dream setup. Somebody who you know is going to keep up with you and push you for at least 80 Zach, miles.
Yeah, I just don't know if he's feeling it or whatnot. I mean, it'd be great if they had a handful of, you know, 5, 6, 7 other guys that are kind of in that caliber, just to kind of make a pack and chase it together, pace off one another. Seems like that's like the best case scenario, but hey, we'll just see what happens.
Absolutely. No, I'm excited for it. Yeah, that should be, if that's the right weekend, it'll also be the same weekend that the Olympic trials are starting. Mm-hmm. So a lot of just like last weekend, a lot of live tracking that you can be doing on your computer, a lot of tabs open. So make sure you pay your energy bill or just find a local restaurant and take all their power. That's always a go-to in the true Taggart spirit. I'm sure support your local business. They'll appreciate that.
Then the other exciting, I think, piece of news in the ultra world, also having to do with more flat running, is the Strolling Gym 40 Mile in Tennessee. So this is it's a pretty old race, and the course record was set back in 1991 by Andy Jones in 3:59.26. It's 41.2-mile road race. And so obviously, if you're running a sub-4 hour on a 41-mile course, that's hella fast. And that record has stood since 1991. They started, I think, 5 or 6 years ago, offering $1,000 prize money. And it was cumulative. So every year that no one broke the record, it would just add to the pot. So I think it's up to maybe 6,000 this year. And Zach Beaven, who we first really heard about, Tunnel Hill last year, ran that. Shoot, what did he run? 5:06 or something ridiculous, like some really fast time. He came back and ran a 3:55.44. So smashed that record. It's awesome to see it. 5:03 at Tunnel Hill. And then he did 4:07 at Strolling Gym 2 years ago. So pretty sweet.
Nice.
Love to see it.
People are crushing, man.
Yeah. I don't know if we have much other news other than Cocodona. I mean, obviously a bunch of other races happen, but, Alexander County, my brother, he ran and defended his title, or his, not his title, but his spot at the 24 hour. So he literally went out to this 24 hour race in North Carolina just to make sure no one beat his fifth place time. And he ended up winning the race. It was really hot. So no one was even close, really. He wasn't even close. He ran like a 1:48. So pretty cool. That'll secure his spot on the world team for this year.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Are we doing Cocodona stuff now?
I think it's time. I think that's
so.
We gotta give the people what they want.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in the chat, and I got to shout out several Cocodona finishers. Stephen Crawford, Andre Lee is in the chat, and they're already talking about some of their favorite, in air quotes, sections of the course. So, yeah, if you guys are hanging out either on YouTube or in Facebook watching this, feel free to drop your questions in, especially if it has to do with Cocodona, because we're going to do kind of a AMA, Q&A type of a thing having to do with Cocodona. Little recap, because we'll probably put it to bed for a while after this week, so to speak, until we like open registration in a couple weeks with some new changes and whatnot.
Oh, okay. Well,
hey, you gotta like hype people up, you know? Come on.
I like it. All right. So let's start with your thoughts as a person who actively raced the event. Just give us a play by play on your experience out there going into it. Where was your head at? Where was your fitness at? We've obviously talked on the show for several weeks that you were kind of coming back from that Achilles issue. So when you towed the line, how are you doing? And then kind of walk us through the progression of how your race went.
Oh my gosh. When I towed the line, I did my typical thing where I do not sleep for the week before the race, and probably only a couple hours the night before. I got to stop doing that. I'm telling you,
correct.
It's not a very good way to go into a race. So that was probably the most debilitating thing. I hadn't run, I think, in a week, a whole entire week before the race. So that didn't really seem to hurt me. I still remembered how to run, and I was able to run still. But yeah, I wanted to start out conservative. I knew that the first climb was going to be huge and tough and intense. And I actually started running more than I would have liked out of the gates because I was live streaming for the commentators. So I was right behind Michael Versteeg. We were behind a pack of maybe 20 folks who were out front. I was just kind of running with Versteeg the first mile, and just kind of we were chatting it up a little bit, which I'm thankful I did that because obviously I never saw him again after that first mile until he was done or until I tuned into the live stream. And other than that, I just kind of faded back. It was pretty shocking to see the Agua Fria River crossing at, you know, mile 3. Completely bone dry. I mean, not even a pool of water anywhere to be seen. So that was kind of like a little bit of a uh-oh, and like, oh, what's to come? It's going to be a hot, dry day. Like, if the Agua Fria is dry, you know it's dry out there. So, but honestly, that first climb was beautiful. Going through the Sonoran Desert. There's actually some sections that are really green and just, it's, I don't know. I thought it was more beautiful than any of the miles down on the Black Canyon Trail itself. Just something about it. And I was just enjoying myself that first climb, hanging out with a bunch of different friends, just chatting it up. I was recording some videos, and whenever I got phone service, I was jumping on to the live stream and checking in with those folks. And then we started kind of rolling through, and it was interesting because someone who I think owns some property up there graded this road we were on. So when I scouted it a month before, it was kind of overgrown and the footing was really awful. There was like a lot of cambered slopes and ditches, and they graded with a tractor. So it was all this soft, freshly tilled dirt. Like, all the vegetation was kind of cleared out, and it was smooth overall. It was pretty awesome, like a nice surprise. I thought it made it a lot better. The runners kind of don't know any different, but yeah, I thought it was great. And then, of course, it was just super hot on that first climb. So I'm not trying to give a play-by-play, but that was kind of how my thing started.
So a lot has been made about the heat water situation that first day, how all projections for first runner finisher, or like even the benchmarks along the course, blown out in the first 4 hours. So what was like, were you aware that everything was super behind schedule and you were like, oh, there's no way in hell that we're going to make these cutoffs or that the cutoffs are going to be reasonable? Like, did you slip into your race director or race designer hat at all, or were you just focused on surviving and hoping that you had enough water to get all the way through that section?
Yeah, I mean, I think I started to think about it, but I didn't really know. I didn't know what time we would top out until we actually topped out. Like, I thought I was making, I think I was making better time than the time I scouted it. Like, I thought I was making way better time, but then when it actually came down to it, that last pitch still slows you down quite a bit. So, yeah, we definitely, I think it was just tougher than everyone thought, that climb going up. And at that point, I was giving water to people as well while I was out there. And then Noah was making his way back with more water as well to kind of help people out. And then from there, it was just all about, you know, recovering from that section and kind of getting restocked and refueled at Lane Mountain. And I did, you know, I did know there was smoother trail ahead. So if you could get to that spot, I knew that there was going to be time to make up for the slow early miles. And I think that was true for most people. Like there were stretches ahead that were significantly easier and significantly faster, if you could get to them.
So you picked up several pacers throughout the run itself, which is not something you normally do. You're pretty much a solo racer for most any distance. So when did you pick up folks, and sort of what were the conversations like, especially when you first picked up, you know, Kevin and Courtney on that first day, or really, I guess, day two? How did that play out? And were you at that point already like, I'm not hunting for places here, I'm just trying to survive? Or like, what was that dynamic like?
Was I ever hunting for places?
Yes. Okay. You didn't know it, but yes.
Oh, I didn't know it. Yeah, no, it worked out well. I ended up having pacers, a lot of pacers, and from mile 71 all the way to the finish. And that was really cool. And I had a crew the whole time. My dad came out and crewed me. Shout out to him. And I had Courtney DeWalter and Kevin Schmidt, husband-wife duo. And they brought me starting at mile 71. And that's where I took my first major nap. I had a couple trailside little tiny breaks before then, prior to mile 60, but got into 71 and took about 90 minutes. They graciously let me sleep for a little period of time and get a little bit of a reset, fed me some sloppy joes. And, yeah, I was running with Kevin that first stretch, right around dawn, into Whiskey Row. So yeah, didn't even quite make it to Whiskey Row in under 24 hours. So kind of like way behind my goals, really, my initial time goals. And that's probably about the last time I thought about or cared about a time goal of any sort. I did not care one bit, I think, past Whiskey Row. It didn't matter to me. I was just going to have this experience and take it as it came and focus on kind of survival and taking in the experience and balancing, you know, getting enough sleep when I felt like I need it to get to the finish line in one piece. So, yeah, it was great. Had Kevin for a pretty big stretch from 71 to 94. And then Courtney came in, and she's great. I mean, she's probably one of the most all-star crew people, not just runners. She knows what you need because she knows what she needs. And so she was like completely repacking my pack and really, really helpful to have both of them out there. And Courtney brought me from Iron King across the heat of the day and Fain Ranch all the way up to the top of Mingus. And I would say probably my lowest point of the entire race was some parts of Fain, but really climbing up Mingus. I was just really out of it, really tired, really negative, and just pretty quiet. Just wasn't trying not to say anything. And I don't know what it was exactly. It might have just been the accumulation of not sleeping much, but and the fact that we weren't even halfway, and it was like so hard. But we eventually got up to Mingus, and I had a bit of a rebirth at Mingus camp, and I don't know exactly why. I didn't sleep there. I didn't stop for all that long. I know I ate a hot dog that Jubilee made, and she was all excited about it. Maybe it was just the energy of seeing her and seeing kind of some more familiar faces. I saw like Tony Hill was up there. I think Tony Russ was up there and some others. But I sat down inside the lodge for maybe like 15 minutes. Yeah, ate some food and switched out with Kevin again. And maybe it was something having to do with topping out on Mingus, where you're putting behind the first half of the course. It's like behind you. You look out. the views are incredible. It's like you're going to the edge of the world. You can see Sedona and Flagstaff ahead of you the whole second half of the course. And it was kind of cooling off again. And yeah, I felt like I was reborn and kind of came. We were like bombing off the top of Mingus Mountain. It was so much fun. Super technical descent. And we were just, I mean, yeah, we were flying by people. We were crushing it. And pretty much carried that momentum all the way into Jerome and picked up Courtney again. She was all jazzed up because I had made a really fast split. And then we ran pretty hard all the way down to Dead Horse. And that's where I got my biggest sleep of the whole race. And that was 4 hours. And you were at Jerome as well.
Correct.
You didn't start pacing there, but you were there. That's kind of where you first saw me, right?
Yep.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet. So, yeah.
Yeah. I probably would have got to Mingus, but apparently some guys in the studio don't know how to do math, and so I was there trying to create a very aggressive spreadsheet to both help the race organization figure out cutoffs and projected times through, but then also, and I don't know if they ever actually mentioned this on the live feed, but I actually created a tab in the larger spreadsheet that was basically, if it says, you know, like on the live tracker, 1 day, 6 hours, 32 minutes, like what time of day is that? And you literally punch it in and then it spits out what time of day it is. And then vice versa. Like, you know, so they can like, I was trying to literally just put in whatever you see and it will give you the answer. And I had it for like, it was a whole thing. Cause
when you're in the studio, like there's no daylight, you don't know what time of day or what's going on, and they're probably losing their minds in here. It's like a dark cave.
And a lot of lights on you. It's hot. And you're just like, all right, well, everything I say is now recorded and automatically and into the world. So let me not completely screw this up. Yeah, shout out to Rob and Matt for holding it down. And Chris for holding it down after dark. Yeah, we definitely had some fun with them, both doing respective live hits from the Jam Cam. But then also, you didn't know this, they were trash talking us at one point, and I happened to just be like, your dad was driving me back to my car, and I was in the chat and I saw them like actually giving us crap, and so I was like yelling at them in the chat because they had no idea I was in there, and just like completely dimed them out. So yeah, you gotta hire better staff, I guess, is the answer to this.
Once what were they giving us crap for?
I mean, basically that they were superior. They were the superior dynamic duo of the Enterprise, you know, just like.
For the commentating team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. So, yeah, we still got bones to break with them. Yeah.
Pull the plug next time.
We'll just power down the internet. It'll be cool. All right, so let's talk just like broadly. The second half, you talked about some of the, I wouldn't say injury issues, but sort of the foot started to bother you and whatnot. How much of that do you think was cumulative distance and time on feet that sort of added to the wear and tear, or was it the dynamics of the course itself, how rocky it was, technical, the amount of climbing? What do you think was sort of a leading cause to your personal physical ailments?
I mean, I'm trying to think what my ailments were. I think I felt pretty good for most of it. I mean, when we were running through Sedona, I don't know, was I complaining about like ailments or anything much?
No.
Or just that it was hot.
Which it was. Well, just it was unreasonably hot. Yeah.
I mean, it was hot, but we were still moving pretty well, I think, overall.
Yes.
A little tired, but yeah, like I said, I was pretty pleased how my body held up overall. And like I said, I mean, I had blisters early on, I think a little bit because of sock and shoe choice. I normally wear really thin socks and I wore some thicker ones with a shoe combo that I think was a little bit tight. So I got some toe blisters, but I just ignored those and kept running through them anyways. And it just kind of, I don't know if they popped or if they just stabilized and then natural hormones or whatever, painkillers just kind of took care of it. And I didn't even notice them anymore. So, Then I switched to a little bit of a roomier shoe, the new Salomon Ultra Glide. I pretty much wore those, I think, from mile 94 all the way to the finish. Didn't have any issues anymore, other than, like I said, towards the end, that ball of foot blister. And I don't know if there was a way to prevent that. Maybe I could have done maybe another sock change, or maybe put some rock tape or Kinesio tape maybe under there or something. I don't know. I didn't really do a lot of foot prevention, and I honestly didn't do much foot maintenance past probably when you picked me up. And maybe that was a mistake. You know, maybe I should have done a little bit more on that end. Maybe just a couple more sock changes, clean them out, let them kind of air out. I don't know. That would be something to look into. Because if it wasn't for that, I mean, I probably could have kept going, you know, with a little sleep, maybe to 300 miles or, you know, I didn't really feel that breakdown where I couldn't move until like right around when you left me that second time, which was maybe mile 235. That's when I felt like, okay, I'm feeling like my body is starting to like really feel the effects, and it's kind of breaking down in some ways that might not let me keep going like I am.
So now I'm just going to hit you with the pre Q&A here. Okay. It's sort of a grab bag. So there's not going to be really a coherent through line. So just prepare yourself for this potpourri. And now is definitely a good time, if you have specific questions, to start dropping them in the live chat on your respective YouTube or Facebook room of choice. So first off, what gear did you have that was most handy to get you from point A to point B?
Oh, man, what gear? I don't know if there's anything specifically. I had one single pack for the whole race. I already talked about my shoes. I think that Ultra Glide was a great shoe to have for, like, I probably should have just worn it for the whole race. I was running in a demo pair that I got, and it was already pretty worn in. So if I had a production model of that shoe, I probably just would have worn it from start to finish. Obviously, lighting at night. We didn't need a whole lot of layers just because it was so hot out. I probably could have used an ice bandana or cooling sleeves at some point. Those are some pieces of gear that I was missing maybe that I didn't expect to really need. But I think an ice bandana would have been clutch for several of the sections.
I mean, bro, we're talking about, you also forgot to pack t-shirts. Let's not gloss over that part. So
they're sitting on the corner of my bed. Oh my God. I show up for the Cocodona with one t-shirt and like four rain jackets. Oh man.
I literally get a text from your dad like, hey, on your drive up, can you break in and grab these? And it's like,
yeah, I think I found out at mile 71 that I had packed one t-shirt. And no long sleeve t-shirts. Great. Doing well.
Consummate professional.
Yeah.
So in terms of the completion times for the runners, how do you feel about the adjustments that were made in terms of sliding back those cutoffs? And knowing what we know now for future editions, do you think that you're more likely to make slight adjustments to the course itself to keep the original time horizons, or to keep the, you know, like slightly extended out the back cutoff through Heritage Square?
Yeah. I mean, it was hard to really guess what it was all going to look like. So we did our best guess, and clearly we were a bit off on the front end. I do think that the course records will come down. And especially when we see a cooler weather year, I think they will drop. They could drop significantly, especially as people figure out the course. Year one is always tough for any event. as far as now we have a bunch of data, so we're going to make our, we're going to adjust the times, obviously. And I don't remember exactly the adjustments that were made mid-race. I know there were a couple to give people some more time, but then our goal was to try and get people back up to be able to finish the course in the original 125. It seemed to work out pretty well. I think we'll probably stick with the 125 overall, but we'll definitely give way more on the front end. And we are talking about probably adjusting the mileage to try and get it down to 250. So that'll give everyone a little more breathing room and probably adjust a couple of the sections to take a little bit of the bite out in a couple spots and like keep people moving a little bit easier. That's about all I know right now until we kind of dig more into it before we get to next year. Yeah.
In a similar vein, around the bite that many runners out there felt, women's winner, Maggie, actually submitted this one. She heard talk about adding a water stop in the during that second section. She hearts water. Actually, she put I heart H2O, which is a great t-shirt that she should definitely have. Is that something that you see is necessary? Because I know that there was another impromptu water stop that got added along the course. But do you think that first stretch, even though we literally told people on this podcast it was going to be brutal, do you think that section was too brutal, or is it just folks got to be prepared?
Yeah, I think we're going to try and add a water stop there. It's very remote, but we are going to, our goal is to get a water, just at least water out there. Not a full aid station, but at least a water drop out to break up that section. It's not to say we're going to recommend you bring less water, but it will help. It will definitely help, I think, to have that out there for sure.
Sweet. Favorite aid station snack that you got during the race?
It's a toss up. Oh man, there's actually a lot of good stuff. I would say toss up between the taco bar and the veggie hot dog at Mingus. Someone else was going on and on about the hot dogs at Mingus too, which is hilarious. Except they hadn't had a hot dog in like 12 years or something, and it was the best thing they ever ate. I can relate to that.
Respect that. Yeah, you powered down like 3 tacos at that taco bar in minutes. Like, you look like a drunk college student at the end of the night, just being like, any food now. It was quite entertaining.
Well, and then I ordered two more, ate one, passed out, and then woke up 4 hours later and ate the last soggy one before I kept going.
Again, very drunk college student move. So
yeah,
I support that wholeheartedly. All right. So at what mile did you start craving Mai Tais? Think you can take a guess at who sent that one in.
I unfortunately didn't think about Mai Tais, but I probably should have. There was talk of margaritas on Cinco de Mayo. That never materialized. I think my dad had one instead. Yeah,
he did.
You had one?
He did, yes.
Okay.
No, I did not.
Probably a good choice. I mean, I don't think I should have been drinking a margarita in the middle of Sedona when it was feeling like 104 out.
Bro, it was unacceptable. The salt would have been helpful, but that's about where that would have started and ended. All right. And then we have a question about, one, how awesome was the live coverage?
How awesome?
Yeah.
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, the fact that we were watching it while out running on course, which I think is a brand new phenomenon in the sport. I've never heard of that before. People participating in an ultra, watching the live stream of that ultra for sometimes hours. I mean, I know I had it on for significant amounts of time, even just listening to it, but also watching it. I think that is a new, cool thing that this race has created.
It's kind of like in the track world where you have the Jumbotron in front of you. And so like you're in front, you're looking at the Jumbotron to find out what's happening behind you. That's kind of what the live stream was.
Exactly.
And honestly, there were times where at least when I was out there with you, it wasn't even a function of us being like, all right, well, like we have to get on ourselves and go live. It was literally just watching what other people were doing and what the guys in the studio were talking about. So,
well, I remember at Walnut Canyon, where you had your phone out watching Maggie climbing Eldon. Mm-hmm. I also had my phone out just behind you watching Maggie going up Eldon. So you got a pacer and a runner watching the live stream while participating in the race, watching what the lead woman is doing, you know, 25 miles ahead of us.
Yeah. I'm going to be real with you. I was real checked out of my pacing duties at that point. I zoned out. And so I was like, well, I might as well see what the good folks up on the mountain are doing. So, and related note, I'm assuming you've heard about this at this point, but, will there be Coca Donut merch?
Coca Donut merch?
No, Coca
Donut. Oh, donut. There should be. There needs to be. There's a logo floating around somewhere that looked amazing. I guess we have to reach out to the designer and talk to him.
I did see that on IG. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was solid. Legit. Okay. There are a couple things that are, I guess, directed towards me as a pacer, but it would be interesting to get your thoughts because we didn't talk about my pacing strategy for you until probably the last 5 miles where you figured out what I was doing, or at least you explicitly said what I was doing. And then we were like, all right, well, all bets are off. But the first day in Sedona, you had no idea what my plan.
Where you just start running and then I start running?
No. It was more involved than that.
Yeah.
But we'll get into it. So how much did I love the course? Hated that thing. Absolutely hated it. It was very beautiful. There were times where Jamil actually was like, hey, stop, turn around and look at this view. Especially when we were coming towards like Huntley Tank. So we had just come off that, like, whatever the hell downhill that was, that scree field that was just like not a trail.
Which one was that?
Where it was between Sedona and Huntley Tank, where we like went on that trail that I literally told you I hated because it was just chicaning everywhere. And then we went up that mountain and then we were just like literally sliding down the side of a rock because of that
cliff.
Weird. Yeah.
The property thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was dumb. It was so dumb. I was like, oh, this is how I die. Like unidentified male, like falls off rock face. And I'm like, whatever. No, the course is beautiful as hell. It's just not something that I had personally trained enough for. So, and especially just like the rockiness, and that's not something that would be easy for me to even replicate in California, at least in this area of California, if I wanted to. So there was a lot of me being like, don't roll an ankle, but we got through it. But no, it was great. And then pacing that far into an event, what tactics did I utilize to keep Jamil moving / motivated? We didn't do a lot of talking. I think, you know, all told, I was with you for 15 hours on the first day and four and change on, well, my first day, your day three, and then four plus on day four. And most of that was silence. I think it was just like, I'm keeping my head down and I'm moving at a very specific target pace and cadence based on the profile, based on the ability to run the section, and based on what I told your father was going to be the time that we were going to get somewhere.
Oh my God.
And so like, I would engage with you and like try to tell you stories if it seemed like you were like zoning out, which is how we got to the point where I told you how to spot a professional in Vegas, at the casino bar to make sure that these are the sorts of nuggets you get when you're with me. But yeah, for the most part, I just, my watch setting, which is how it is all the time, but it was very useful for this. And this is the part that you did not know was, it has the pace that I'm currently moving at. And so it was like, okay, if I'm walking, I'm walking at 15 miles or 15 minutes per mile. And if I'm running anywhere between 9:15 and 12, depending on the grade. And like, we are just going to keep this going and I'm going to go no slower than 4 miles an hour. Like that was the goal.
Gotcha.
And And so you didn't know, you were just like, oh, he's just running, so I need to run now. But I was very deliberate, like from, what was it? Not from Deer Pass to Sedona. I was like, I looked your dad in the eyes. I'm like, we'll be there at 1 o'clock. Like we walked out. I was like, be there at 1 o'clock, be ready at 1 o'clock. And we walked in at 1:06, which, which for how hot that section was, the fact that we stopped to basically have a chat with the Tropical John as he was creating the water drop, for how trafficked the airport loop was, because it's the middle of the week and apparently kids don't go to school anymore. And so like everybody and their mom, so everybody and their mom was just like taking over the trail and we had to like keep standing on the side for all of those things. But again, mostly how ridiculously hot it was and how I sweat through every layer and my pack was completely a different color. To be only 6 minutes off in that section, I was very happy with. So it was a very much a pace from the front situation. I would just be up there and we'd be grinding. The one part that I thought almost blew up the plan was when we went live in that section and you started running up the hill that I was not planning on running up. And I was like, this is like, I'm happy he's moving and feels good. But if this comes back to bite us in the ass in 2 hours, like this is going to be problematic, but it sort of like worked out in the wash. Missed that target by 6 minutes. And then from there, I think we were good until.
Well, last couple miles into Black Tank, we kind of fell apart.
Well, we fell off the last 2 miles into Huntley slightly. Well, I think it was like 9 to 11. And then that's when we teamed up with Sarah O and her sister. And then we just like basically like cruised it in and they dropped us. And that was hilarious because I don't like getting dropped on what is very much just a road. And you were like, yeah, it's happening. I was like, okay. So shout out to her. Actually, shout out to both of them. That was just it was a nice conversation to be like, hey, like we're just people. And then we just caravaned it in. It's a Black Tank. We just, Jose didn't have a light. So like you said, ended up hanging out with him.
That's a factor.
I was just chilling with Jeff and we're just like, tell me your life story.
I was off taking restroom stops and whatever.
I had not packed a light, forgot my phone was in my pack so I could have used that flashlight.
So you were also lightless. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, because the goal was, I was like, we had left.
We're going to get there by.
We were going to leave. We're going to get there by sunset. Like we left at sunrise. I'm dropping this man off on the mountain by sunset. And then it fell apart. And I was like, well, yeah. So that was me as a pacer on day one. And it was also definitely 10 more miles than I had like mentally prepared for because I picked you up at Dead Horse instead of Deer Pass. And yeah, so that was a fun 47, 48 mile day, 15 hours door to door, had another hour drive or so back to the car, and then a treacherous hour and a half drive to Flagstaff where I was pretty much hallucinating. I also didn't pee for like 11 hours there. So that was fun. Yeah, that's how hot it was. I was drinking 3 liters between every aid station. So 3 liters every 4 hours plus drinking more and eating at the actual aid stations and from the airport loop, like pre Sedona aid station until I got back to my car, did not have the urge to pee once. So
I also took probably a way too long of a stay at Sedona aid station. That probably hurt your dawn to dusk plan.
Yeah. I wasn't banking on a full hour, but like,
yeah,
it was also crazy hot.
It's a little too much. I could have stayed outside and just got doused with water and to cool me down. And that probably would have been better, but hey, whatever.
Listen, at that point, I was just like, let me just figure out because that was the inflection point for me because the next aid station was not crewable. So if I left Sedona with you, I was like, all right, cool. I've already
you
gone
had to go the whole way.
26 miles. I have to go another 22 or whatever it was. So even for me, I was like, I'm not going to push the issue here because, like, I don't know how I'm feeling. And looking back at the live stream, I was like, oh, I looked like hot death and felt as much. But I was like, anything for the cause. So we got it done. It was fun. And then, the second day, significantly easier. I woke up and my knee was beat to hell. But I was just doing all sorts of crazy gymnastic stretches in my hotel room, and then was able to get you from Fort Tuttle to Walnut Canyon. And thankfully, Sensman came in to save the day, because we joked that there was no way in hell I was going over Eldon, but I also needed to make my flight. And if I went over Eldon, I was definitely not going to make my flight. I would have literally had to get straight into the car and drive directly to the airport. And based on what was already a very rough drive to Phoenix, if I had run another 20 miles over a mountain, probably would not have survived that drive. So,
well, we had a couple pinch pacers. We had Anthony first overnight, mm-hmm. and then we had Eric at the end. So that was clutch on both accounts for sure.
Absolutely. Cool. That's pretty much all the ones I had pre-submitted. So I'm gonna trust you to look at the chat and.
Yeah, we'll hop in. I think there's a lot of people just chatting with one another.
That's cool, too.
Rob's in here. Matt's in here.
Of course they are.
They're taking over already.
Yeah.
Let's see here.
Next week,
oh, see, Rob says, Skylar, you didn't climb Eldon.
Told you. Also, things that did not occur, ? Yo, what happened to that cha-cha slide?
It was like very half-assed done. I'm sorry. I was like I was in a great mood coming into the finish. I wanted to be done, man, so bad. And just, I didn't want any hoopla at the finish. I just wanted to like cross the line, collect my buckle and like walk into the darkness and like be left alone.
You know,
but of course that did not happen.
Yeah. Literally as I was getting ready to leave, how my night went down, finished pacing you, went and got drinks and pizza with your father, had a great old time. Corey Woltering was sitting at the next table over. So that was a sight. Who I should have asked for Speedo recommendations, because my tan lines got really aggressive during this damn event, but that's neither here nor there. And then I just like went back to the finish line. Told Jubilee, yo, play Cha-Cha Slide when he gets here. Force this thing to happen.
Oh, she and did then, force it. And it good. Was the most awkward. I'm sure a video exists, but I was like, I was not feeling it. I did like a couple of things, and then they finally put me out of my misery and shut it off. So thankfully.
Good.
So,
good.
Yeah. I was fully embarrassed if that's what you were going for.
That was completely the plan. That's all right. What I'm here for.
Stephen Crawford says, we are so lucky to run last week considering the Tussock fire near Crown King. So I don't know. Have you kept up with this much or seen what's going on right now?
Not since I left the state, no.
Yeah, a fire broke out on Saturday afternoon, the Tussock fire. You know, it broke out right by a dirt road, so I'm sure it was like a campfire or some human-caused thing, which sucks. But it's like 3,500 acres right now, 0% containment. It's like 8 miles southwest of Crown King. It's shut down basically the entire first 55 miles of the course are currently closed to the public. They've evacuated a bunch of communities. Crown King is on set to evacuate and no outsiders mm-hmm. are allowed in. So definitely got lucky with like the fire season here for this event. So yeah,
it's dry. Like it's so the dry. Entire Southwest is just dry.
We got some people that are stoked on the live feed saying it was a great mix of big picture, front of pack, family style feel with requests from the chat being answered, check-ins from all over the course.
Mm-hmm.
Major shout out to Matt and Rob from Graham here. Let's see.
I will say also to their credit, I don't know how this got pulled off, but they did a phenomenal job of just getting sort of like, well, I guess in the news interest to be like a human interest story, like the Stand the Man situation. I don't know how that jumped off, but then like coming into that, you know, as a viewer and like being able to follow that hype train and as he finished his day at Whiskey Row and, you know, his family was in the chat. His wife was in the chat. It was their 36th wedding anniversary. Like all of that was so boss. And it's just like, it was so organic. I don't know how that could have been created, but it was one of those things where it was just like, these sorts of things are why everybody loves the ultra running community. And so to be able to highlight that for somebody who was literally at the back of the pack, was awesome. So kudos to obviously Stan and his whole family. I'm still waiting on this couple's IG, cause we will create a separate section here to highlight Stan the Man's journeys. But also shout out to the guys in the studio for, working to make sure that everyone had a voice during the Kokoda 250.
Yep, for sure. We had some people stoked on the descent down to Jerome, Scott Ramey, or coming out of Jerome as well. Those were some of the toughest sections on the whole course was like the in and out of Jerome for sure. There was a question about how did things go with Jerome. We don't fully know yet. I think we upheld our end of the bargain as far as I know. I know we did have to ask one person to take down a photo. I think they did. So I think we upheld our end of things. We'll just have to see. I know Steve's going to get in touch with the town of Jerome and kind of see if we're good to go on that end. Let's see here. Let's see if we got any new questions. When can we expect to see some info on when the documentary film will come out? That's a great question. I honestly don't know the answer to that. I would imagine it's going to be several weeks at least in the making, if not at least a month. I mean, the team got, I think, like 5 terabytes of information, of footage, and I can imagine it's going to be a huge task to get through all that stuff. So, Stephen Crawford says, I was impressed by how things were managed by the team in Jerome. I would agree. I think it was very professionally done. And while we went through there, I think we did great. Let's see. Has Skyler talked about USATF Golden Games 100 meter races?
Yes. Yeah. We chatted TK. Don't worry.
You have to check it out earlier in the show, on the front end. Laura Bellman says, I was amazed how Maggie kept standing at the finish. I mean, she's Magatron. Come on.
Crushed it. Wholeheartedly.
Some people are talking about the Coco Jabroni podcast. I think I missed a lot of these inside jokes.
Yo, there was a full-on community.
The Java Jabronis.
A lot occurred in that live chat.
Yeah.
I'm amazed more people need to get fired.
We need like some highlights. What's that?
I'm amazed more people to get fired from their jobs for just like live streaming in the background all day. Yeah.
Totally. We're kind of running out of questions. So there's like 100 people in here hanging out. Thank you guys so much. If you have anything else to share, please let us know, or any other questions for us.
Yeah. We got to shout out Andre though for finishing.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Last man standing there. It was one of the, like, me and you actually had conversations on course, like pulling up the live tracker, like, where's Andre? Where's he at? How's he doing? Going after his, was it 52 50Ks in 52 weeks?
Like 50 50Ks in 50 weeks.
Okay.
He just turned 50. Yeah.
Yeah. And he
because he was
near, like
he was kind of like, he was kind of in that last position for a long time, like the last half of the race, just kind of hanging out with the sweepers, bringing up the rear. And we had no idea if he was going to be close to that 125 hours, like just kind of hoping. And he just kept chipping away. And then they're out there, you know, our team is like recruiting pacers for him because he was just out there solo. Mm-hmm. So he had pacers from Tut Hill to the finish that kind of just got crowdsourced, which is amazing to see. And man, I unfortunately wasn't able to be there when he came across the line, but just seeing the video and the photos of his finish was so inspiring, and just like what a magical moment, I think, is just incredible.
Yeah, he could definitely take some weeks off now, which is good.
Yeah, he's got a lot of 50Ks.
He's got a few
to recover. I think he'll probably be back out at Adrenaline, maybe Pinal Peak or something, so...
Man, it's crazy. And also, in terms of folks that we have shouted out previously on the show, I want to say it's Carl Balloon who won Raised by Rams in the Vert is Real category. It was doing a bunch of ascents up and down Diablo out here in the Bay Area. He was out of Cocodona. He crushed it and grinded it out. So good to see that he was able to transfer over a virtual challenge into the real world that Air Viper brings to the table. So shout out to him. Bay Area love. That's really, I'm just going to hype my people up. So
absolutely. Yeah. Brian Purcell, running in the desert question. How do you maintain a proper amount of sunscreen to avoid getting burned? Good question. I mean, you kind of need to apply a couple times a day. I did not do a good job of applying on day one. Got a bit fried. Started applying the next couple days. I know some people out there got really fried. Probably did not apply enough. So I think... I don't know what the proper amount is, but, you know, definitely get your face and your arms and your leg. I would say just apply probably at least twice a day. General rule. I don't know if anyone's out there an expert.
Yeah, I mean, look at the instructions. I think, is it for swimming? It says like once every 2 hours or something like that.
Well, that's if you're swimming. So I guess you get a little more time out of it if you're not swimming, but you're sweating. So.
Yeah, I was like, I don't, because it's the same wetness for me. So, yeah, I definitely had some nose peeling over the weekend, which was super exciting.
Nose peeling for sure.
Yeah.
Wildlife sightings. I confirmed with a few runners that there was a mountain lion and two cubs. A lot of talk of mountain lion and two cubs near Arastra Creek. I've read that in several race reports. A lot of snake sightings. I think I saw two or three. One of them was dead in the middle of a road. I almost stepped on one in Toosie Goot. So,
I made sure you didn't get bit by one. You're welcome.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we saw that one near Limekiln, huh? So there was... I saw three. Running at altitude. Tons of Super Chat donations during the broadcast. Yes, thank you so much for all of that. That is a huge help to us and the future of these live streams. Life is Trail Running says, congratulations for finishing the Cocodona 250. The live coverage was absolutely amazing. We watched it all. Justin asks, what does recovery look like after an event like this? So it looks like a lot of sleep. And that's what I've been doing. And honestly, I don't have... tons of plans to immediately return to running. I would say I'm using this week to get caught up on some sleep. I'll probably do some running by the weekend. Part of that is I have to, but I have an event I'm scheduled to be at for a shoe launch for the Salomon Ultra Glide, the shoe I wore for more than half of Cocodona, 2/3 of Cocodona, really. That shoe's launching, and we have an event in Moab on Saturday, which is pretty exciting.
Okay, hold on. Before we jump too far off of that topic, follow up, because Hard Rock, the next race in the Slam to the Dam 2 Electric Boogaloo, was it July 15th, 16th, 17th, somewhere in that pocket.
Yeah.
So we are functionally like 9 weeks away, 10 weeks away.
Okay.
What does training look like after something like this? Do you in your head, you just use Cocodona as like just a really big aerobic week, and now you start thinking about, you know, putting some speed stuff on to prepare for running uphill? Do you have to start getting altitude acclimatization? Like
I'm not going to have time. I'm just not going to have time in life to get altitude this year. So I don't know what I'm going to do about that. I honestly don't. I don't know.
I keep you accountable. I guess let's throw some stakes in the ground.
Let's talk about that next week.
Okay.
I think I need a week to kind of chill, but
unacceptable.
We could talk about it. Yeah.
All right, cool.
So I'd like to get back to some regular running, you know, for sure. I just don't want to rush it. Because, like, my Achilles whole issue from Barkley seems to be gone. I don't feel like I have any injuries leaving this. I also haven't run yet, but knock on wood.
And just from the person who didn't actually race this side, having spent extensive time with your father as crew chief talking about what went well, you know, you were very well hydrated. You were taking down nutrition throughout the whole thing. So there are definitely some things that we want to replicate for you at Hard Rock, just from a, like, you being able to succeed standpoint.
And at this point, I mean, after Cocodona, most 100-mile races look like a walk in the park, to be honest. I mean, okay, what, we're going to be out there 30 hours? It's like less than a third of the time. Like, shoot, it's like a sprint. Are you still planning to be out there, sir?
We're going to try and make it happen.
All right. Yeah, Grouse to Ure.
Okay.
You can do it. You can do it. It's a road all the way up, and then it's just a 5,000-foot bombing descent. Nothing to it.
Cool. Yeah, because I don't have a race after that at all. No, let's just blow my whole shit up.
Or you can just come and just cheer.
We'll work on the logistics of it, because I do have a wedding.
If you don't want to pace, I've got backups.
All right. We'll talk about it. We'll game this out.
Abraham Franson, watching the coverage inspired me to commit to my first big trail run goal, Art Loeb in Western North Carolina. That's awesome.
Nice.
Corey Woltering, what happened to him? Basically, the miles from Pinhoti caught up with him, essentially. Yeah. So, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Respect the recovery, you know? Like, this is not something where it's like, as soon as I feel good, I'm going to be able to just pound it out again. And I would even extend that and say, Taggart Van Etten, careful, bud. Careful. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
You get a breakdown at some point. All right. Let's see here. Ryan Magnum, did you see my question above? I missed it. Let me see if I can find it, Ryan. When you get to it, could you touch on how you would train for a 200-plus-mile race? I've ran a few hundreds, but curious. I don't know if it honestly changes that much. It's more of a change of mentality. And then the biggest thing is having a sleep strategy or dealing with sleep deprivation, I think, is the biggest thing. You're going to be going slower than 100 miler as your average pace, but you're obviously going to be going longer. And I think the things like hydration and nutrition and your race logistics become so much more important. Your management of your lights and your batteries and your mindset, I think, become more important than just your training alone. The way that you can sleep and then get back up and get moving again, or like Skylar said, a strategy of running and walking a certain pace to kind of keep yourself moving. I think those are much more important. I guess much more about strategy and then it is just about training. So, that being said, I think doing a 100-miler as training is a good idea, or definitely doing 100 before you do a 200. Not everyone who finished Cocodona has run 100 before, believe it or not. But I would still highly recommend it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Actually, when I was my kind of jump pacing duties with Jeff for a little bit, you know, FKT specialist of the world, you know, fastest known tiger. Like, that's literally what we talked about. He's like, you know, it's nice to be able to train my body to go into that sleep deprivation mode every now and then. And you don't want to do it often, but you know, this race was a good way for him to practice that, so that when he goes for his next FKT, he knows, like, he's been in that well recently enough that he can tap into it and feel comfortable that he'll get through and get the job done successfully on his next attempt. So, you know, just knowing your body's ability to go into the rabbit hole and like still being able to dig, that's going to be crucial for you.
Yeah. If you can find an all night trail run, whether that's or create your own, just a training run that goes through the whole night, like stay up all day, work all day, maybe Friday night, run through the whole night and then take a little break, do another long run Saturday, just kind of get used to running at all hours and at all kinds of times of the day and states of mind and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Adrenaline in 2 weeks is what Andre Lee says.
My man.
Nancy Hobbs says, don't forget to promote the Ultra Glide event on Moab. I touched on it a little bit. You might be able to still sign up. Salomon is launching a new shoe, the Ultra Glide. It's their new cushioned shoe, designed for long races like this. And, you can come and be one of the first to try the production model of the shoe, which launches June 1st. We'll be out in Moab, this Saturday. So there is a sign up online. I think you can go to, Autry's website for that.
Okay, wait, Trevor, hold on. We're just hyping group runs? Well, then I'm pretty sure this will be the first group run back of San Francisco Running Company from the Mill Valley store this weekend. So if you're in the Bay Area, come through Saturday morning and just go have some fun in the headlands. Go.
Trevor Metting, also a Cocodona finisher. That's like, to me, like going straight to the top of anyone's running resume right now is like, if you're a finisher of Cocodona, all the respect to you, ladies and gentlemen. Volunteer teams out there were top notch. Shout out to all the people who took the time to help us achieve the running of Cocodona. Carrie Allen. So will we have live streams for every Air of Ever race going forward? If we had the budget for it, we would do it. We will have more, and I promise you that. It will not be every single race, at least not this year. But, man, if we can find a way to make it sustainable, be so fun. So I'm shooting for – I haven't talked to my team yet, so I don't want to jump the gun. But I want to do one later this month if we can pull it off. I think it would be super fun. We'll see if we can do it. If not, we'll probably have a couple this summer. And definitely several more in the fall. Javelina for sure. Log is the new linear. Is ultra running evolved into the point of needing to say, respect the distance for 250 miles? I guess so. Charlie Seymour, Cocodona 500, out and back. No.
No.
No, 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 no. We're not doing that. I think once you get above 250, you just go and you do FKTs, okay? You do long trails, you do FKTs. I think that's about the limit. Don't know that we need to go further. What else do we got here? There was one question about what were we going to change next year.
Mm-hmm.
What changes, if any, do you plan on looking into for future Cocodona from Aaron Berger? I talked about it a little bit. We're talking about adding a water drop between aid stations 1 and 2 near Milk Ranch. So having a water refill station there for the athletes. We're talking about adjusting those early cutoff times now that we have a bunch of data to look into. Looking at probably a couple minor modifications to the course we want to dial it back to 250 miles. And get it as close to on the dot as we can. And I know you inaugural year runners, no one will ever take those miles away from you or that finish. But I think getting it to 250 and maybe taking out a few of the kind of pointlessly technical sections would be great. The future of Jerome is unknown right now. We don't know if that town is going to embrace this race or not. We would love for them to embrace it. If they're not going to, we'll just have to see what our other options are. So we thank everyone who helped with that this year, but we just don't know at this point. Other than that, we might adjust the start day of the week, possibly. If you guys have other suggestions, there is a post-race survey going out, and you'll be able to let us know all of your feedback, good, bad, and the ugly, and let us know. We want to improve this race. We want this race to be one of the most premier races in the world, and that is our goal. We want people from all over the world to come here and to enjoy this event. And, I'm stoked that it is as tough as it is. I think it, you know, man, the accomplishment is cannot be understated. I think for all of us that were out there that witnessed this event in any regards knows that this is, probably just, it's just one of the coolest events. I know it's the toughest race I've ever done personally. And, just grateful right now for being able to toe the line, for everyone that came out, for all the inspiring people out there. It's just an incredible experience, this whole thing. And I got to shout out Anthony Culpepper. Don't want to forget that guy. Couldn't make it out this year. I know it pained him to not be able to be out here with some of his health concerns right now, but he is truly someone that was one of the founders of this race. He was right there along with me 2 years ago scouting the course, and lots of brainstorming sessions over the years, lots of big dreaming about what this could be. And I was hoping he was going to be out there sharing the trail with us, completing this first year event. And hopefully he can get healthy and we can see him next year take this thing on. So what else?
I mean, we also need to make adjustments to your ability to have all the drinks in all the bars that we talked about.
Yeah, I didn't do a very good job in my bar tours, did I?
You did not. You did not, no.
I did the beer in Crown King, and I did the whiskey shot in Whiskey Row, and then I just stopped.
That was it.
Damn.
I did end up at a karaoke bar in Cottonwood, which was entertaining. So I had a beer there for you. but, yeah, everything else was wild. I did see Flagstaff in the late hours of Cinco de Mayo, which is to say I saw all the college kids at one bar and was like, I don't have the energy for this. So next year we will do better.
All right. I think I'm upsetting people in the chat here. People are saying, don't take out the technical running. That's not what I'm saying. There's going to be plenty of technical. We're just talking about, we're talking about just trying to get it down to 250, I think, is our biggest thing. So plenty of technical miles, plenty of rocky terrain, plenty of toughness. But yeah, again, please keep the feedback rolling. You guys want it to be 10 marathons? Do we want to go to 262? I don't know. You let me know. Just kidding.
No.
I mean, they wanted to go 500 already. There's people out here.
Spoken like somebody who didn't run the damn thing. So... I don't understand how rough that was. There was a point where I literally yelled at you because it looked like we were going to have to go over this thing. It was literally called Summit Trail. And I was like, if we're going over a mountain or any sort of hill unnecessarily, I'm going to murder you and throw you off this damn cliff. And you luckily avoided it, which honestly only ended up saving us like 85 feet of gain. But
where was that?
It was coming off of Airport Loop. That like crazy section, like
before
the road, and I was like, "If we go up this goddamn hill, I am going to throw you off this cliff." And you were like, "No, no, no, it doesn't go." And I was like, "I don't know if I trust you," but
yeah,
there was, that whole section was nuts.
Cool. I am not crazy. I did not run it. minor sure. Question. Is the year on the back of the buckle or is the first year buckle unique from later years? No, the year is not on the buckle. And it should – it's likely going to be the same buckle for quite a few years. We had a big die made for the race that was, you know, not inexpensive to make and create. And we'll have that for – that will stamp all these buckles for quite a few years. So, it will be the same one for quite some time. But we do have a really amazing, I don't think we've posted the pictures yet, but a wall art that you can get that's going to be personalized. You can put your buckle in it. It's like a buckle holder that'll have the year and your finish time on it. So, it's a good keepsake that we have on the website at cocodona.com. So check it out. Anything else? Should we kind of wrap things up for this week?
Yeah. You know, I'm just waiting for my 100K buckle, but other than that, it's cool.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a good place to stop for this week. Obviously huge congratulations to you, sir, as a finisher, and congratulations to everyone who finished the Cocodona or even toe the line. 'Cause it was a wild, wild week of adventure. And a shout out to everyone who participated in the live streams, either assisting on course or just dunking on people in the chat. Very entertaining to watch as it was happening, especially while me and you were literally moving along the course. And more of that is coming down the pipeline. So make sure that you subscribe to this channel, subscribe to the Air Viper channel. Make sure you also hit that like button on this video on the podcast so that we can keep talking to you in between these crazy races, because things are going to keep happening in the running world and in our lives, and we're going to keep you guys up to date on it. And, you know, next week, we got to start turning our attention to keeping you accountable. So don't get caught by surprise when next week we start asking for this training plan, getting you ready for Hard Rock.
No rest for the weary. All right, we got to get ready for it.
I'll
do some work. I'm going to try and source an altitude machine, so we'll see what we can do.
All right.
It'll
be good. Sweet.
All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week on the show.
Have a good one.